Okay, let's dive in. When you think about farming, maybe you picture planting, harvesting, maybe dealing with the weather. But under the surface, there's this really complex world of managing pests. And it's way more than just deciding when to spray something.
Oh, absolutely. It involves a whole lot of rules, regulations, and strategies.
Exactly. And for anyone working on a farm, especially here in California, getting a handle on those regulations, mastering the skills for safe pesticide use. It's not just good practice, right? It's often the law.
It is, particularly when you're dealing with certain types of materials. It's a legal requirement.
That's really what this deep dive is all about today. We're looking into that specific area, understanding pest management, focusing on California farming, and, well, the requirements around pesticide use.
And we're drawing from excerpts of a study guide. Think of it as the core knowledge someone would need if they were getting ready for a pretty important certification in this field.
Right. So our mission basically is to pull out the key stuff from that guide. What do you really need to know to handle pesticides safely, effectively? The kind of things they test for certification. I'm actually really interested to get into the practical side of
And
it.
I'll help break that down, kind of translating the guy into a conversation, highlighting the main takeaways.
Okay, let's start with the basics then. The landscape in California. When we talk pesticide regulations on farms, who actually needs to be paying attention? Is it just the person, like physically doing the spraying?
No. It's much, much broader. If you're handling pesticides on a California farm, and that could be an employee, the owner, someone leasing the land, a manager, you have to know and follow the rules, federal, state, and local.
Wow. Okay. So that's a wide net.
It is anytime pesticides are used on that farm property.
So if you're in one of those roles, what are the key responsibilities beyond just knowing the rules exist?
Well, a huge one is recognizing the hazards, knowing what the risks are with pesticides and how to avoid them. But it's also about the whole life cycle, knowing the laws for sale, use, storage, transport, application, even disposal.
Okay.
And importantly, if you supervise others who handle pesticides, you've got that extra layer of responsibility. You have to make sure they are doing everything correctly and safely.
The guide actually defines a pesticide handler. That sounds like it could cover a lot of ground. What kind of tasks make someone a handler?
Yeah, it's pretty comprehensive. It's not just the person spraying. It includes anyone handling open containers, mixing, loading, applying, or even assisting, like being a flighter for an aerial application. Also incorporating pesticides into the soil and adjusting or repairing equipment used for treatment, even removing protective coverings from treated areas. And it also covers entering treated areas during the application or before it's safe, according to reentry intervals. And finally, cleaning or maintaining equipment that might have pesticide residues on it.
So yeah, that really does cover a lot of different jobs on a farm, some you might not immediately think of.
Exactly.
Now, the guide mentions restricted materials. It says they need certification. What's that about? Why single those out?
Right. Restricted materials are basically pesticides that are considered to have higher risks. Maybe they're more acutely toxic to people, or they pose a greater threat to the environment, like contaminating water or harming wildlife or beneficial insects.
Okay, higher stakes.
Definitely higher stakes.
Right.
So, because of that, federal and state laws say that anyone using California restricted materials in an agricultural setting has to be a certified applicator.
And that applies even if you hire someone else to do the application.
That's the interesting part. Yes, even if a licensed pest control business, a commercial applicator, does the work, someone connected to the farm operation itself, like the owner, manager, or maybe a key employee, still needs to hold what's called a private applicator certification, or PAC.
Okay, so the PAC is crucial for using these specific materials on your own farm operation. How do you actually get that PAC?
You have to prove you know your stuff. There's an examination process to demonstrate competence, particularly around safety and effectiveness.
A test, basically.
Yep, pass the PAC exam, meet some other requirements, and then you can apply for a permit. That permit is what lets you buy, possess, and use those California restricted materials for agricultural purposes on the property you control.
And is that certification permanent once you get it?
No, you need to maintain it. It requires either taking 6 hours of approved continuing education courses every 3 years, or you have to retake the exam.
Got it. Keep learning.
Exactly.
So if you have this pack, does that mean you can use these restricted materials anywhere, like, say, helping a neighbor farmer or doing pest control around your own house?
Ah, good question. No, there's a key limitation. The pack is strictly for agricultural applications on the farm property you own or manage. If you needed to use restricted materials for something else, like post-harvest treatments or maybe landscape maintenance or structural pest control that requires different types of certifications from the California Department of Pesticide Regulation, the DPR.
Okay, that's a really important distinction. So this study guide we're using, its main job is to get people ready for that pass exam, correct?
Precisely. The whole point is to give you that core knowledge you need for the certification. It focuses heavily on using pesticides safely and effectively on the farm, how to prevent accidents and injuries, and crucially, how to avoid causing environmental problems.
And if someone's actually using this guide to study, what's the best way to approach it? Just read it cover to cover.
Well, reading carefully is important, obviously, but the guide points out these things called knowledge expectations. They're usually at the start of chapters and sometimes within them. These basically flag the most critical concepts, the stuff that's likely to be on the exam. So focusing your study using those expectations is really helpful. And then definitely use the review questions at the end of each chapter. They're a great way to check if you've actually grasped the material before you sit for the real DPR exam.
Makes sense. Use the guideposts.
Exactly.
All right, so moving past the rules and regs, the guide jumps right into something called Integrated Pest Management, IPM. What exactly is IPM? It sounds, I don't know, more strategic than just reaching for a chemical.
It absolutely is more strategic. IPM isn't just reacting, it's a whole system, a program. It starts with really understanding the pest's biology, and it relies heavily, constantly on monitoring. You need to know what tests are there, what stage they're in, and if they're actually likely to cause economic damage.
So data-driven.
Very data-driven, and the core idea is combining a variety of control methods, not just one, in a way that's sustainable long-term. It involves prevention, cultural practices, biological controls, and yes, sometimes chemicals, but as just one piece of a bigger puzzle.
And what's the ultimate goal? What are you trying to achieve with IPM?
The main goal is long-term pest suppression, keeping pest levels below damaging thresholds. But, and this is key, doing it with the least possible negative impact. Minimal impact on people, on beneficial organisms, wildlife, pollinators, you name it, and on the environment as a whole, air, soil, water.
Okay, makes sense. So if you're starting an IPM program, where do you begin? What's the absolute first step?
Before anything else, you have to know what you're dealing with. Correct pest identification is non-negotiable.
You can't fight an enemy you don't know.
Precisely. You need to know exactly what pest it is to choose the right tools. This means active monitoring, maybe taking samples, knowing the common pests for your specific crop and location, maybe using identification guides, or even getting expert help sometimes.
The guide also mentions key pests versus secondary pests. What's the difference there, and why does that matter for IPM?
Good point. Key pests are the ones that cause major damage pretty regularly. They're the consistent troublemakers. You almost always need a plan for many common weeds fall into this category.
Okay.
Secondary pests are different. They aren't usually a big deal, but they can become a problem after you manage a key pest. Or, and this happens often, after a pesticide you use for the key pest wipes out the natural enemies that were keeping the secondary pest in check.
Ah, so treating one thing can cause another problem.
Exactly. It's a ripple effect. Understanding this difference is vital because your actions can sometimes unintentionally create new pest issues. Resources like the UCIPM program website are incredibly helpful for figuring out these complex interactions.
It really shows how everything's connected, doesn't
It
it?
really
And the
does.
guide really hammers home the importance of monitoring an IPM. Why is constantly checking on pests so critical?
Monitoring is, well, it's the foundation. It's not just a one-time look. It involves using specific, repeatable procedures to track pests over time, their activity, their growth stages, their numbers. It's how you gather the intelligence for your whole program.
So detection is just the start.
Right. Detection tells you they're present. But continued monitoring gives you the crucial details, their life cycles, habits, how environmental changes are affecting them, which stages are most vulnerable to control. It informs everything.
What are the benefits of doing all that monitoring? It sounds like a lot of work.
It is work, but the payoff is huge. It lets you see seasonal trends, track beneficial insect populations, your allies, choose the most effective control method if you need one, time any applications perfectly, and importantly, figure out if what you did actually worked.
Assessing effectiveness.
Right.
Yeah.
It's essential for making smart decisions. Without good monitoring, you're just guessing.
The guide also brings up follow-up monitoring.
Hmm?
What's that about? Why monitor after you've already treated?
Follow-up monitoring is just as crucial. You do it after any control action spraying, releasing beneficials, changing a cultural practice. You even do it if you decided not to treat a threat. But the pest is still a potential threat.
All right.
After a treatment, the follow-up tells you, did it work? Did we get good coverage, say, with the fungicide? Is the pest population actually down? And are conditions still right for the pest to bounce back? Do we need to do more?
And what if the treatment didn't work as planned?
That's where follow-up monitoring plus good record keeping really shines. It helps you diagnose the failure. Was the timing off? Did we use the wrong product? Is there resistance developing? It gives you the data to figure out what went wrong and how to adjust your strategy next time.
Right. Learning from experience, but with data.
Exactly.
Okay, so it's clear IPM involves combining different tools.
Right.
What are the main categories of control methods that you pull together in an IPM program?
Well, it really starts with prevention, things like choosing resistant varieties or encouraging natural enemies from the get-go. But then, yeah, you integrate methods from four main buckets: biological control, chemical control, mechanical and physical controls, and cultural controls.
Let's take those one by one. Biological control.
Biological control, or biocontrol, is using living organisms' natural enemies to manage pests. These can be predators that eat the pests, parasites that live in or on them, pathogens like bacteria or fungi that make them sick, or even competitors that outcompete them.
And how do you actually use these natural enemies?
The guide mentions three main approaches. There's classical biocontrol, usually importing a natural enemy from a pest's native region to control an invasive species here. Then there's augmentation, where you buy and release commercially reared natural enemies to boost the local populations.
Like releasing ladybugs.
Kind of, yeah, or specific predatory mites or parasitic wasps. And finally, there's naturally occurring biocontrol, which is about understanding and protecting the beneficials already present in your fields or orchards. Protecting your allies.
That's really cool. The guide has some case studies that show this in action, right? Let's talk about Vicente and his vineyard mealybugs.
Yeah, that's a great example. Vicente noticed Argentine ants were tending vine mealybugs a bad sign because ants protect mealybugs from predators to harvest their honeydew.
Ah, a symbiotic relationship that's bad for the grapes.
Exactly. So he confirmed the pest ID, likely using UCIPM resources, and started scouting. His approach wasn't just one thing. For biocontrol, he used augmentation-releasing mealybug destroyers, a type of lady beetle larva. He also used classical control by releasing a specific parasitic wasp, Anagyrus pseudocotchi, which targets vine mealybugs.
Okay, so hitting it with multiple beneficials. But he did more than just biocontrol.
He did. He added cultural control. Since mealybugs can spread on equipment or clothing, especially the young stages that can't fly, he set up a wash station. Workers had to clean dust off equipment themselves before leaving the infested area. That simple sanitation step helped prevent spreading the mealybugs to clean parts of the vineyard. It was a combination approach.
That really shows how different methods work together. So what about chemical control in IPM? It's not just banned, right?
Right.
But it's used differently.
Definitely not banned, but used much more strategically. In IPM, pesticides are a tool used only when monitoring shows they're needed, and ideally in combination with other tactics for better, longer-lasting control.
So more targeted.
Very targeted. The IPM approach is all about selecting and applying pesticides to minimize harm to people, to the environment, to those beneficial insects we just talked about. It means choosing the most selective pesticide that will still do the job effectively and is safest for non-targets. The guide mentions spot spraying weeds only where they exist instead of broadcasting herbicide everywhere as a good example.
Makes sense. Okay, what about mechanical and physical controls?
These are methods that either kill the pest directly or change the physical environment to make it unsuitable for them. Mechanical controls could be things like using traps for rodents. Physical controls might include mowing weeds, using steam to sterilize soil before planting, or putting up physical barriers like netting over fruit trees to keep birds out, or mesh screens on greenhouse fence. That last one is often called exclusion.
Okay. And the last category was cultural controls. We saw sanitation with Vicente. What else falls under that?
Cultural controls are all about manipulating the standard farming practices to make life harder for pests. Things like adjusting irrigation schedules, too much water can favor root diseases or certain weeds. Crop rotation is a huge one, especially for disrupting soil pests like nematodes.
Right. Changing what's planted breaks the pest cycle.
Exactly. Other examples are careful site selection to avoid problem areas, removing crop debris that pests might overwinter in, cleaning equipment between fields, even managing manure properly in poultry houses to control flies, modifying the habitat, like removing weedy borders where rodents hide. Choosing plant varieties or animal breeds that are naturally resistant to certain pests is a big cultural control, and even just adjusting your planting or harvesting dates to avoid times when pests are most active.
Wow, okay. That's a lot of different angles. It really sounds like a comprehensive IPM program is a detailed plan. The guide even had a sidebar with a sample plan, didn't it?
It did, yeah. And just looking at the components listed there, site details, risk assessments, specific scouting protocols, mapping out which methods for which areas, it shows you how thought out these plans really are. It's not haphazard.
Let's look at that second case study, Marisol with her mandarins. That seemed like a perfect example of how monitoring directly influences the choices you make, especially about pesticides.
It really was. Marisol found citrus thrips causing damage. She got them identified, probably using UCIPM and maybe her pest control advisor, and then started monitoring closely.
And what did the monitoring tell her?
It showed she had a significant thrips population, enough to cause damage. But, and this was crucial, she also found lots of beneficial insects already working in the orchard. Predatory mites, lacewings, natural enemies of the thrips.
Oh, so she had backup already there.
Exactly. And that discovery, based purely on her monitoring, changed her decision. Instead of maybe reaching for a broad-spectrum insecticide that would kill everything, she consulted the UCIPM guidelines. Based on the presence of those beneficials, she chose a specific pesticide, spinosad, and used an outside coverage application method.
Why that specific combination?
Because the UCIPM resource indicated that spinosad, applied that way, would be effective against the thrips, but less harmful to the predatory mites and lacewings she saw. She picked the option that preserved her allies.
That's smart. And did the follow-up monitoring confirm her choice?
It did. A few days after the treatment, she monitored again. She saw that the thrips numbers were significantly reduced. The pesticide worked. But just as importantly, she found that many of the predatory mites and lacewings had survived.
So the beneficials were still there to help clean up.
Precisely. They could continue working on any remaining thrips, potentially meaning she wouldn't need another spray later on. It's a perfect illustration of how monitoring allows you to make a selective, effective choice that fits the bigger ecological picture on the farm.
That really drives it home.
Mm-hmm.
Monitor, understand, then choose the right tool, not just any tool.
Exactly. Preserve the beneficials whenever possible.
Well, we've certainly covered a lot of ground here. We started with that foundation of regulations, the need for certification for restricted materials in California.
Mm-hmm. The PASSE certification.
Right. And then we moved into the whole philosophy and practice of integrated pest management IPM.
Looking at monitoring, combining methods, using those case studies from the guide really helped bring it to life.
Yeah, I think the key takeaways are really know the rules, get certified if you need to, embrace IPM as this sustainable knowledge-based approach, understand that monitoring, including follow-up, is absolutely central to making good decisions.
You can't manage what you don't measure. Exactly. And finally, the power of strategically combining those different control methods, biological, chemical, physical, cultural, to tackle pest problems effectively and responsibly.
It's definitely clear that modern pest management, done right, is so much more than just spraying. Mm-hmm. It's this intricate system of understanding the ecology, observing carefully, and then making these really informed choices about the best mix of tools.
Absolutely. And thinking about Marisol's situation, it brings up a bigger point, doesn't it? You know, considering how interconnected everything is, the pests, the beneficials, our actions, the environment, how does managing one pest, making one decision, ripple through that whole farm ecosystem and maybe even have effects beyond the farm gate?
That is definitely something to chew on. This deep dive gives a really solid grounding in the complexity, the responsibility, and the integrated thinking needed for effective pest management today, especially for anyone heading down that certification path.